Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission?
Hi, Piper. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We are at the wonderfully beautiful, stunning Annex Hotel, and I'm so glad that we're having a conversation today because I've been admiring you and your career from afar, and I'm such a big fan of everything that you guys do as a team as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I've never been here before, so I'm thrilled to be.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful day, and I want to talk about your career, some of the big milestones, how you tackle a lot of the challenges. Because what I find really interesting about speaking with athletes specifically is a lot of the lessons can be extrapolated and applied to kind of like the everyday person
yes.
that is not, you know, training every day or, yeah. you know, trying to achieve a gold medal and stuff. But a lot of really great insights that can be gleaned from an athlete's career and tackling, you know, mental health, perseverance, all these different themes that we love to talk about.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
Good. We're experts at a lot of those things.
Yeah. So ice dancing is known, obviously, for its artistic expression yeah. and storytelling. How do you choose the different kinds of themes or narratives for your routines, and what kind of messages do you really like to portray or convey through your performances?
It's changed over time. Paul and I have been together for such a long time that we kind of go in phases, and we used to go in like 4-year periods because of every 4-year cycle going into the Olympic Games. Like, we wanted to try out new things that made us grow as individual athletes and as a team. So a lot of what we do is a collaborative process. Like, most of it's different now, but like say July to August, we're sending each other different types of music and kind of just feeling what speaks to us. Mm. And I don't know, over time, I think Paul and I've really kind of gravitated towards those storytelling types of programs, not necessarily like the I lovey-dovey sort of thing, because that's not the type of people that we are. Mm. We're more telling like the stories of two individual people and how they coexist together. And like this year we're telling a story of from Wuthering Heights, but it's more of the relationship of love, how it can take you to the darkest of places, but it can take you to the highest of places, and how those things can coexist. And I think that's something so special about what we're able to do every single year is create something from a fresh page, turn it over and start new. And we've just trusted our coaches because they've really never told us that we can't do anything. And
right.
I think that's really helped us grow as individual artists and individual athletes to be able to tell our story. And I was speaking about this the other day, but they're like, how do you feel after performance? Like, break it down. And I said, every performance feels different. It's because you take your individual experiences and life into every performance, because some days you're tired, you're sad, you're angry, but it's fun to feed into that through those characters that you're playing every
yeah.
single day.
Yeah, and so when you do get to start off at that blank canvas point, mm-hmm. what does that process even look like? Like, do you guys have like a shared playlist that you're like kind of like parking all of your ideas and songs into, or like, well, how does that creative process begin?
It's different. Like, our coach, sometimes she's already thinking of next year and she won't tell Paul and I, and she'll tell us maybe right before Worlds. She's like, I have an idea for next year, but I'm not going to tell you. So like we sit there and we're like, oh, she's got something, you know,
right.
or a lot of times like we have no ideas at all, and someone will, you know, go to bed and then just dream of something, and they're like, I have an idea, I'm not sure I'm gonna be able to make this work, I'm not sure if we can find the music, but let's give it a go. And I think we've kind of branded ourselves as the what are they gonna do next team. Like, they can never anticipate what we're gonna do. And we used to call ourselves the Cliff Jumpers because we'd create these programs that seemed so interesting to us and different, but we didn't really know if the judges and the skating community would accept the stuff that we were doing. So every time we would go to perform it for the first time, it felt like we were jumping off a cliff. We were like,
right.
please love what we're doing because we love it. But I don't know if they are. So I think that's been so rewarding for us when we do jump off that cliff that we somehow land on our feet and our creative process works. It's just, I don't know, we're never afraid to say, like, let's try it, let's do it. We never say no. So I think that's what makes us so unique and
right.
our creative process so fun and engaging.
Providing different perspectives, keeping yep. it, like, switching it up all the time, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I guess building on that, like, where do you find the balance between your identity as an athlete and your identity as an artist? How do those kind of two personalities yeah. and things kind of come together?
I think it's difficult. I mean, figure skating, it naturally coexists. Like, you have to be an artist in some ways. Like, we train so much dance just in our day-to-day training. Like, we've got ballet classes, we've got ballroom, we've got modern dance, we do hip hop, you know, but we're in the gym, you know, we're yeah. doing Pilates, we're training on the ice, and it's hard because some athletes really just brand themselves as I am the strong athlete, but they lose the like some of their component points because they aren't engaging in that artistic point. And I think, I don't know, there's a really, really difficult, it's a difficult balance. But I think the thing is you have to stay curious. Mm. You know, being an athlete, you're always thinking, okay, how can I change my training to benefit what I'm doing, right? And then right. as an artist, you're like, okay, how can I think outside the box and not put myself in a box? So you always have to kind of, I don't know. And I think that's what's unique about working with a team is that they're always bringing in new things
yeah,
outside of yourself. Yeah, so you always are just kind of moving with the flow of being an athlete. I know that's a difficult, really, question kind of to define because our sport is naturally artistic and things. But I think it's just, I don't know, having an open mind of what is possible as an athlete and
staying curious.
Yeah, staying curious. Really.
Yeah, you are kind of bringing up like taking like different types of like disciplines of artistry, whether that's like hip hop or jazz.
Yep.
It reminded me of that final scene, or that final part in Bring It On, where they're taking all these different classes to kind of give themselves different perspectives and kind of approach their final routine in a different way.
Yep.
That's a sidebar.
That. It's just like it's a few so weeks
good.
Ago.
It's so good. For the first time?
No, it's just like, it was on one of my things and I was in China and I needed something to watch and I was like, oh, I have Bring It On. Like,
so
let's
good,
watch it.
So good. So, you know, ice dancing, there's an individual component, you know, in terms of like your individual performance, mm-hmm. also like a team kind of component with you and your partner, Paul. Mm-hmm. How do you strike the balance between pursuing your personal excellence and working in harmony with your partner?
Yeah, I think it's about communication. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have our own vision on what we want to achieve and on what we want to do on a personal level. And then as an athlete and as a team. And I think that's something that Paul and I have learned over time. You know, we've had past partners that maybe the communication, it was pretty easy in the beginning because we had our parents to kind of navigate us a little bit. But as we got older, you know, we had to really learn how to listen to each other. And it's like having another relationship and another like husband in a sense is that, you know, you have to actually listen to the things that you're telling them. Don't get offended. You know, you have to grow and think, okay, what do they need as an individual? And then making sure that you speak your truth. And I think that's something that Paul and I really value is that like we're able to do our own individually creative things. And we also bring our own things to the table. Like when I first started skating with Paul, like I was very much I'm a little bit late. I kind of go on my own schedule. I'm artsy. I'm go with the flow. Like I don't have a lot of schedule. And Paul was very much like, this is how I work. This is what I do. Like, I need you to tell me to do something and I'll do it. And I'm like, I'm a feeler, you know? And I think over time, you know, you learn those things about people. And I don't know, again, that's a life lesson that, you know, we'll take elsewhere is learning how to say your truth but not be offended and grow as one. And I don't know, I think that's why we're able to kind of go our own different directions but still be able to support each other when we can. And and grow as a team.
I guess it is true that like it is so much like a relationship, any other relationship, whether that's a friendship or like a romantic relationship, in that like a lot of the core foundational principles in terms of like communication, trust, respect, all still apply.
Yep.
So that's really interesting. How long did it take for you guys to really find your groove together and understand your individual needs and how that fits into like the bigger picture?
I would say around 3 to 4 years. I think we always call the first, 1 to 3 years is like the honeymoon phase of any relationship, because you're on your best behavior. You want to compete and you want to do well, but again, you don't know how people are going to react under stress, under that pressure, all of those things. And it's a time of pushing the buttons, you start to figure out like what makes them tick, or I said the wrong thing, or the approach was different, or, I think definitely around year 3-4 is when you really kind of just let yourself be, let yourself kind of go with it. You understand a little bit more about them, and I don't know, it's a forever growing sort of thing. You have to, and again, we grow as people, so you know, what we were able to do at year 3 and 4 is very different than how Paul and I are now. So it's just, we adapt over time. But I would say year 3 or 3-4, we were like 100% invested and we knew exactly what to do with each other and how to be.
I also feel like just the nature of what you do, you probably have spent more time with each other than some of your closest people in your lives.
Oh, yeah.
Whether that's your partner or your family members, because you're with, and also like through like the most intense pressures, like the most intense kind of pressure cooker kind of situation. So that is like probably one of the closely bonded relationships I can only imagine.
Yeah.
As like two athletes working together in that kind of setting.
Yeah. I mean, we've grown so much to each other. We can like go to a restaurant and I'd be like, okay, Paul would order this, or he would order that, or he knows like what my order would be. So it's kind of fun. Like, just to really see how much we know each other. And even when we communicate on the ice, like, we don't really communicate. We just kind of like make noises, and or we say this doohickey thing or that. Like, we just, I don't know. We have our own basically language, and I think that's something that's so special. And even people in my family would not understand.
Yeah. Obviously, when it comes to ice dancing and just like skating in general, I feel like when we talk about things like self-expression through artistry, but obviously, like, the style and the fashion are such a big part of that conversation. The relationship between sports and fashion has really become increasingly prominent, and I think for skating has always been a part of that conversation, it seems like. How does your personal style really influence your kind of on-ice persona, and do you see kind of, how do you see that connection between those two things?
Yeah, it was definitely something that started at a very young age for me. It was something that my mom and I used to do together to bond. Like, we used to go through like countless magazines to be like, oh, I really like this look. And back in the day, we used to have these things called compulsory dances, which, we had waltz, foxtrot, all, like, I had like 5 or 6 dresses that I needed to get done throughout the year. And which made it really fun because we had so many options. And I think that's something so unique about what we do in ice dance, is that we're a bit more on that creative side, and it's also a little bit political. So a lot of like what you do and how you portray yourself is through your costumes and through your hair, through your makeup. And I think that gives you a little bit more of like a confidence boost. And I feel like the audience and the judges can kind of see that. So fashion has just been one of those things that for me is, again, a self-expression. And I've always been an athlete to kind of push the boundaries in what I want to do as an artist in my costumes, and some good, some bad, I would say. As I go back and I look and I'm like, oh, that was not a good look, or, good try, but maybe next time, sort of thing. And when I moved to Canada and I started skating with Paul, that was one of the coolest things that, my new coaches were so excited that I had my own idea and expression of how I wanted to dress. And even then, I know Paul was just like, I'll wear whatever you want me to do. So I really had so much control of what we wore as a team. And I think that's what's made us so special, is that we've had so much input on what we do, how we dress, how we portray ourselves. And I think that's that just don't know, gives you confidence to try things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that's being an ice dancer for sure is like the dream athlete sport for me, because I love dressing up and being someone other than myself out on the ice, but still bringing a bit of myself on the ice through my clothing.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that it can be political, because like fashion and style are so often kind of a reflection of what's going out in the bigger world.
Yep.
A tool for protest or a tool for activism.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that it can be political, what does that mean within the world of skating? Like, how does that kind of translate?
Well, when we were younger, it's more about like how you place. When we were, how you place, how many points you can maybe get from just how you look.
Mm.
And that's what's unfortunate a little bit about what we do, is that we're such an aesthetic sport and we're judged from the moment we step on the ice, even on practice. And that's something that, you know, I wish at a young age I didn't have to fully go through, because we're the only discipline that has to show up with full hair and makeup for every practice that we do. The judges are there at every practice. Like, we never get a break without, like, their eyes are always on us. And I think, yeah, you learn very, very early in life that, you know, you have to present yourself, because if you don't, or if you have a slip up, you know, they start to doubt you a little bit in what you do, which is sad, because it really should be about the performance that you're putting out on the day. But mm-hmm. we all know, you know, after being in the sport for a long time, that it isn't always just about that. And, you know, it's
all about the package.
Yes, it's way, way more complicated, and I could go on and on about it. But yeah, it's an interesting sport. And I would say that that's my favorite part about it, is the political part. But it does make you have to be on your ball all the time.
Yeah. We're talking about, you know, self-expression, artistic expression through mm-hmm. style, through dance. How long do you think it really took you for you to realize your own identity as an athlete and an artist, and kind of how you wanted to really shape yourself and mold your career?
Honestly, it's taken a long time to fully trust who I am as an artist and as an athlete, because I am in a very watched sport. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to doubt the things that you're creating, and people are so quick at giving you feedback and saying, you need to be more like this, you need to be more like this. So it's really hard to be able to shut out all the things that people are telling you, you know, and then you really have to start to dig deep and be like, well, no, this is my project. This is my life. This is my sport. Like, my voice matters. And I really don't think it was until about probably 6-7 years ago, right before my mom was going through brain cancer. And I know a lot of people were talking, and I don't know, it made me grow up fast.
Mm.
And it made me think, like, life is short. You know, when I don't feel good and I don't want to show up for something, like, I need to say it, instead of just being like, okay, I'm just going to do it because I know people are watching, or they're going to think differently of me. And I think, I don't know, just, I think, again, when you have situations in your life, it makes you think, like, you know, who am I? What do I want to be? What do I want to represent as a person? And I don't know, there wasn't like an aha moment really, but I know during that time specifically, I did a lot of growing, and it really started to reflect in everything that I did, my style, my sport, I don't know, just my overall presence. Like, I felt a stronger human, but I had a lot more people that I leaned on during that situation, and I learned that it was okay to lean on these people.
Yeah. Be
like, okay, you can help me, but I can stand on my own and have a voice. So it was, I don't know.
Both things can be true.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So much of your sport is based on external validation, and we've been kind of talking about it.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, you've got judges, you've got fans, even your coaching team.
Yep.
There's so much kind of scrutiny, not even on your performance, but how you conduct yourself, as we're talking about.
Yep.
And presenting yourselves. how do you protect your sense of self-worth in a sport that has or is so influenced by the opinions of so many others?
Honestly, it's about relying on your core people. Mm-hmm. You know, I have dealt with my fair share of mental illness. You know, I think being an aesthetic sport, you know, hearing, wow, you look a little different today, or, you know, don't maybe not eat that. So, I mean, for our sport, you know, eating disorders is something that's extremely high, and it starts at a very young age. And I would say, like, you know, I've been in that world, and it's terrible. And I think the important thing that I would say is finding those people that can help you, you know. And it's, once you've dealt with that kind of stuff, it's something that sticks with you for a very, very long time. But again, it's finding the right therapist, finding, you know, your core people. And honestly, it's really scary to be able to open up and say that you need that help. It feels like such a leap of faith. And you sit there and you're like, no way, they're going to judge me for, you know, saying I need help or
being vulnerable.
Asking for anything. Yeah, yeah. It's extremely frightening. And then the moment you do it, you go, oh, that wasn't so bad. Like, oh, this isn't the first time they've heard it from someone or, you know, whatever. And it's being able to open your community and open yourself to seeing outside your box. Like I used to call, and still when I get a little bit stressed or like I feel, again, overwhelmed with everything and my mental health starts to go down, I feel like I call it my snow globe. Like I feel like I'm in this snow globe and things are going around me, and I always need someone to like stop me and make the snow like all fall, and I can actually like see outside the snow globe. Like this isn't just about me, you know, there's people around me that can help. And I don't know, it's a tough thing, but again, I think it's about your knowing who you are as a person, I think really helps you overcome all of the influence and the opinions, and also not staying on social media and looking at everything. I think as a kid, I was like, wow, this is great information. I can, you know, take it in. And I was kind of like a sponge. I wanted to hear all the comments that they were saying so that I could be better. But over time, and when you're a teenager, you become a little bit more vulnerable, and everything feels like a stab to the heart, and you're just like, but I'm trying, you know, especially when it came to fashion. Like if they said, oh man, they don't like my costumes, it felt like they were just like killing me in the stomach. Like I put so much work and effort into that thing. So, you know, it was learning when to shut out certain things, and then learning again, using your voice and saying like, hey, like can't say those things.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, don't listen to those things. You know, this is something that you don't need to hear. Or if someone has a problem with you, they're going to tell you, you know. So it's just like you learn that stuff over time and through age. But I don't know. I think figure skating is a really hard sport when it comes to mental health and everything.
I mean, to your point, social media has such a huge role in that conversation now because of just the and also, like, I've seen how passionate the fan base is in the skating world specifically, just based off of past stories that we've done. You know, we've had like a small little glimpse into that and how intense it can be and how passionate people are. Mm-hmm. But I can also see how that could be quickly turned around. So how do you deal with protecting yourself when it comes to like the digital space? And, you know, one, having that relationship with fans, but also creating those boundaries with your fans too.
I find for myself, there's parts of me I'm willing to show. You know, I think a lot when you see my Instagram, it is a bit more on the happier side, the more playful side. And it's funny, when I do have those darker sides and those darker moments in my life, I stop posting. Because when I start to go through a space, I'm like, wow, everybody is so happy, they're so whatever. But what's been so unique about social media in the last couple of years, there's been such a switch, is that people are starting to become a little bit more vulnerable and a little bit more open to, you know, not their perfect day, their perfect photo, their perfect reel. And I think that's starting to become more of a topic. And I don't know, for me, I'm still not fully ready to be like, I can show myself crying on camera or that kind of stuff, but I am willing to, you know, communicate, especially if people DM me, they say, I'm having a hard time, like, how do you deal with this kind of stuff, especially when I was going through all my my ovarian cancer, when I actually started to speak out about it on my social media platform. It was so freeing to hear all of these other women's reaching out saying, hey, my mom went through this, or hey, I'm going through this, or I know someone that went through this, how did you deal with it? And it was really interesting to see, in my own perspective, social media had changed because of me being vulnerable with them and our audience. And I don't know, it's created a whole new level of appreciation of the people that I have around me on my platform. And to see them kind of grow with me and change with me, it's been really, really fun. But again, it can be a dark place.
Yeah. Two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
You know, your journey includes a significant personal challenge with ovarian cancer diagnosis. How did this impact your mindset and approach to your athletic career, but also just your holistic kind of perspective in general?
It changed everything. It was one of those things. I knew something was wrong in the middle of a competitive season. It was one of the first events I wasn't feeling well, and you know, I started to go and get myself checked out and all that kind of stuff. And over time, I started to understand that it was a little bit more serious than, oh, I have a cyst, like a lot of other women. And my whole approach on life changed, and how I approached skating. It was like this: every time I get to go out on the ice, it's a blessing. And every time I get to see my friend, it's a blessing. Every time I get to do something, like, I'm so grateful. And I don't know, I think it made me go through the experience with such strength. And I don't necessarily remember telling myself, yo, you need to be strong for yourself, or, you know, you need to put on a brave face. You know, and of course, there were times where I was scared. You know, I've had family members go through cancer and see the other side of it, the not so great side. And I don't know. It was, I think that's really why everything, you know, kind of worked out for me in some way, is that I was like, okay, I'm just going to be grateful for every moment that I get. And I don't know. And then when I realized, like, hey, if I can speak a little bit of how I handled the situation, maybe that'll help someone else going through it. And I don't know, I struggled really thinking about when I was actually going to speak out about it. And I ended up saying, hey, I've had it on, you know, World Ovarian Cancer Day in May 8th. And I don't know, it was so freeing. But then once you actually say it, again, you're way more vulnerable, you're way more open. And I do live with the fear of, like, hey, is this going to come back? But I now know that there are other people who have gone through the same thing, and then it gives me strength leaning off other people and hearing about their stories. And when I do a little bit more research, it's just, I don't know, my outlook is, I don't know, I'm here on this earth for a reason right now, and I don't know, I'm trying to do as much as I can. If I can help people, then I will. If I can't, then just at least hear or listen to them. I think it's, I don't know, my whole perspective on who I am and what I can handle as well is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. How are you using your platform to really, you know, or do you want to use your platform and continue building on that conversation? Or do you feel like this is a good space for you right now in terms of where your boundaries are and kind of helping you stay focused on your kind of respective priorities?
Yeah, I would love to do a little bit more on it. I've done stuff with Ovarian Cancer of Canada. Like, I went and did their walk back in September, and really that's all I really can do at this point. I know the skating is kind of my priority, but I really want to find a time and place in my life where I can commit a little bit more to that and really just advocate on, again, getting yourself checked at a young age is really important. Like, don't think about all the other things that you have to do. Like, as a woman, creating that open conversation is something I wish someone had done with me sooner. And talking about, you know, women's periods and that kind of stuff and making it a normal topic, I think has to change. And again, over time, I think that's something that I want to do. It's just like trying to juggle being an athlete and all that kind of stuff. But it is a thing that I would love to do in the future.
Yeah, and just advocating for your own health.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had some really interesting conversations with women now. They're like, man, like, just because I saw your story, like, I went and got myself checked, and hey, like, I had it too, and thank goodness we had this conversation. And, you know, the women around me are now getting themselves checked, and it's kind of cool to be like, okay, like, good on you. You're, like, you're taking care of yourself, and I don't know. It's really nice to see a little bit of change in my little space.
yeah, absolutely. shifting gears a little bit, so the Olympics are obviously the pinnacle of many athletes' careers. How do you prepare for mentally for such a high intensity kind of moment that takes, you know, every 4 years to come along, and really like comes drills down to like one performance or two performance or whatever it might be. How do you prepare yourself for something like that?
There isn't like a set thing, like, or a set amount of run throughs that we have to do. It's really, again, I think creating that confidence between Paul and I is really the most important thing. So creating that confidence comes with, you know, how much training that what we're doing, how much resting that we're doing, how much off-ice training that we're doing, how much physio we're getting. You know, I think all of that comes together. Well, not all of that comes together. Like, you, I don't know, you can step out onto that ice and almost turn your brain off because your body knows exactly what it needs to do. But I actually have a really funny story. Our first Olympics together as a team, we did our short dance at the time, and it was great. We were sitting in a really nice position, and then the free dance came up, and Paul and I, the year of the Olympics, our program wasn't doing well, so we switched programs like a month and a half before the Olympics, which is just crazy.
A month and a half.
Like, think we'd been months and months preparing for the Olympic season, doing another program, and it wasn't working. But it was funny, the two of us, like, we were like almost shaking, like warming up and marking our program, and I was like, we had no connection. And I was like, someone needs to say something. I was like, Paul, are you gonna say something? Do I have to say something? And I was like, okay, I need to say something. And I like grabbed his hands and I was like, we need to chill. Like, we need to calm down. Like, we've done this program, we're ready for this, you know, this moment. And it was funny, again, that's where our communication has gotten so good over the years, is that, like, if someone just needs to say something, right, until, but after that moment, we both, like, just chilled, and, like, we had probably one of the, like, the most fun performances we've ever had at the Olympic Games, because we just kind of were like, okay, like, we've made it here, we did the work, we're going to just let this program skate, and, like, I don't know, we had an Olympic moment, you know, and that was a very different time of our life. And when we went to this last Olympics, you know, people, we had so much more pressure to be on the podium. You know, we were third at Worlds the year before, and again, there was a lot of, like, they could do it. And I think by hearing, again, that outside voice that they could do it, it created a little bit of doubt, like unnecessary doubt, like where, you know, we knew we could do it, we could get through these programs, but a little bit of doubt started, I think, to creep in, and we were making changes, again, listening to other people and having almost too much comments, and we kept changing things and never sticking to our creative vision and what we were comfortable in doing as a team. And I think that really changed our experience at the Olympics, and we didn't have the best skates, and it was quite frustrating to, you know, looking back, like, man, I really wish we didn't actually listen to those people, because we were in our own space, you know, and that's what we do well, is, like, we do well when we're in our bubble, we trust what we're doing, and we don't listen to this stuff. And I don't know, the Olympics is a whole different beast, but I think it's now, if we ever did another Olympics, I'd go in with a little different mindset of being like, okay, I don't need to listen to all you people. Like, I'm going to do what we're going to do, and that's it, you know, and be happy and content. And I think, I don't know. Yeah, it's,
I guess, like, because, you know, the seems like your experience between the two are very different. Mm-hmm. So what are you taking from individually from those two experiences into, you know, the next round that will really help you kind of prepare, like, mentally and physically and understand based off of the previous experiences?
I think, again, it's now owning who we are, like, not apologizing for the decisions that we make or what we decide to do, and committing to that, like, don't be sorry for being you, That would be the approach. I think we went into the first one a little bit like that. Like, we're the newbies. We're just happy to be here, you know? And at the end of the day, really, we should just be happy to be at the Olympic Games, just like every other athlete. But we can control our situation a little bit more by a little bit more, a better mindset, a bit more confidence in our abilities, because we've been on top of the podiums the last couple of years. I think we just have another level of confidence and our own self-worth.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the conversations we have with, you know, entrepreneurs and business leaders and community leaders, you know, it's so interesting because we talk to some of the biggest people in their field and that are excellent at what they do, and most often there is a common theme of like imposter syndrome. Yep. How does that, has that played into your life and your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most of the time, I think this season, for some reason, I've been dealing a little bit with that more on the beginning half of the season. I think, you know, coming back from having cancer, and now everybody knows, and then we had the most successful competitions we had the earlier half of that season when I was sick. I was like, can I not be successful at, like, not being sick? Like, you know, there's a lot of things that was going through my head, and over time I'm like, no, that's so silly. Like, you were good because you were good. You put the work in, you put the time, and like, you believed in yourself because you didn't put the pressure on yourself. You know, you're just happy to go to the rink every single day because it was a blessing. You know, I think it's so easy to be like, man, can I do it again? Can I do it again? But when you eliminate that and just be grateful, I think, for the experience and the life lessons that you're learning every time you go and do something, you become more and more of the person that you want to be, you know, and having that self-worth. And you get rid of that imposter syndrome. You just start to believe in you. I don't know. And I've specifically dealt with it more this year and past years, when, again, when I was younger. But, you know, I feel like I'm kind of on the okay.
Yeah.
I believe in me now.
How do you celebrate your accomplishments and your wins with that kind of mindset?
Ooh, it's funny. It's going to sound bad. It's that I don't really feel like I celebrate our wins. Mm. I don't. I think because there's always more to do. We're on to the next competition. We're on to the next. Like, Paul and I really allow ourselves, and this is where I think, you know, I could be better, and I think we could be better, is that I think Paul and I really allow ourselves like a night to be happy and celebrate what we've done with our coaches. Like, we always seem to find time to do like a family dinner with our coaches and our family, and it's this collaborative celebration of the people that have supported us. You know, our village are there to gather around us, and they're like, yay, we win, okay, cool. And then Paul and I, you know, we'll text each other and be like, okay, I didn't see this, we have terrible leg line here, or, you know, this lift needs to change. And we're constantly in that perfectionist mindset. And you know, I took a year off like many, many years ago, and I couldn't watch myself skate for a full year. But then when I, like a year later, I was able to watch skating with an appreciation of the work that I had done, you know, and I didn't see the ugly leg line. I didn't see that kind of stuff, because we're always in that mindset. So I think the, like, knowing what we've accomplished may set in a little bit later when we're retired. But yeah, it's hard to really celebrate, you know, what we've accomplished sometimes, because we're still in the I need to be better
mindset. Do you have any boundaries between each other in terms of when to talk about work and when to not talk about work?
Sometimes I get in trouble about talking about work too much, because it's hard not to. Yeah. You're like so invested, and it's my whole life. But what's so cool, I think, again, about who Paul and I are, we can take a step back and be like, hey, okay, how was your weekend? Or like, did you try out that restaurant? Or did you that, like that? I think we know we need that balance. So it's just like finding the time and finding when, hey, maybe we should just not talk about skating at the moment. Like, let's be a human. Like, let's have that human connection and that human interaction. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. looking ahead, what are you most excited about? What's like bringing you joy, and what's the road ahead look like?
Oh boy, a lot of things. We're heading to a world championship in Montreal in a week and a half. It'll be the first time Paul and I have competed on the world stage in Canada since our first world championships, which was in London, Ontario, many, many years ago. And it was an experience like no other. We were a new team, we had to skate first, which is a terrible place to skate, to open, you know, the whole show. But I remember like the intensity of the crowd. Like people were already waving their Canadian flags. They were already starting to do this like slow clap to a fast clap. And I was just remembering like, oh my gosh, like how are we gonna do this? But it was so much fun. And I'm like so looking forward to, you know, performing on home ice for this world championships. And it'll be amazing. But then right after we finish worlds, like the next day we head to Japan. We start our stars on. Yeah. Next day we're like, okay, see you later. Like, see you later, competitive side. And then Paul and I kind of transition into our performance side. Like we tour with Stars on Ice, and we start the tour in Japan, and then we'll start to head across Canada. And then I think we may be heading back to Japan for more shows. Like, I don't know. It's fun. Like we have a good balance between the competitive, like serious stuff, and more of the professional side of like choosing the programs that we want to do with no rules. So that's really what we're looking forward to in the next few weeks. But I'm really, really looking forward to a vacation too.
Yeah,
I need a break. Fair. My like legs are tired.
Fair.
Yeah.
One of the ways that we like to just wrap up our interviews is talking about mission and purpose. So what is your personal mission for yourself?
My mission as a person is to encourage anyone that's, you know, like a young athlete, just a young child, that being yourself is your superpower. Like, it's funny, I look back at old videos of myself, and I can still see myself as I was as a child, and I think that's so powerful, you know, to not lose yourself again and change yourself because social media says you should, or someone says you should, or, you know, who you are when from your first footsteps is a beautiful person. And I think learning about yourself over time and how you can make those things that make you feel good or that you're good at your job, you know, because you're already a step ahead of someone else, you know, if that aren't believing in themselves. So I think I really want them to know that, you know, you don't need to change as a person as you get older. Just continue to stay who you are, and your path will find you.
I love that. I love that. Last question. What does glory mean to you?
Ooh. What glory means to me is, it's funny, I find it's like your own personal strength and your own personal vision of you. And like, things can be glorious in different parts of your life, or I don't know. I think it's a very personal fulfillment. And it can be, you know, I know people can get wrapped up in the whole, oh, they're on the top of the podium, or they're on the top of their game. But I don't know. I feel internally glory when I'm doing things I love. Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Thanks.
Thanks for the chat, Piper.
No problem. That was so great. This is wonderful.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
thanks
me too.
So much.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?